the late 80s, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television, and to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, and welcome to Pat Trek. This is the show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Winninger, to Star Trek The Next Generation, a show that I've never seen.
And I have seen a ton of times. And Patrick, did you ever think about going to medical school?
No.
No?
I'd be awful at it.
You, why?
Well, I mean,
I know your wife. She's a nurse.
Yeah. Yeah. She's really good at it. I don't think I would have the patience or, you know, the ability to not be grossed out.
Exactly. Speaking of grossed out, the beginning of this episode is nasty.
Yeah, Transfigurations.
Whew. I don't think we've seen anything since the one where that guy's head exploded.
Yeah.
That's been this gruesome. And that was at the end of the episode.
Right, this was just gore,
yeah,
which was pretty surprising to see from Star Trek.
Yeah. Well, that's not the fun fact.
Oh, okay.
I have a different fun fact.
Whoa.
That's a lot more fun.
All right, let's hear it.
Remember that scene where Miles O'Brien shows up and he hurt his shoulder kayaking?
Oh, yeah, in the extremely early 90s wetsuit that he's got. I had a backpack that looked like that.
Me too.
Yeah.
I also think I had a windbreaker that looked like
that. I'm sure I did as well.
Anyway, this is the very first time that we see his love of kayaking. It comes up again.
Oh, it does?
And again, and quite a bit in Deep Space Nine as well.
Huh. Goes right back to it, even after dislocating his shoulder, huh?
Well, if it's so easy to fix.
Yeah. He must love that kayak, then.
The kayaking's pretty fun. Have you ever been?
I have not, actually. Mm. I've done stand-up paddling, which was fun.
Oh, really?
Really hard.
Yeah, I feel like my legs would get tired.
Yeah,
who stands for that long?
It's hard to stay on that thing. I bet Miles could do it, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, for Patrick's log, this came out June 4th, 1990. And I had some trouble getting, like, a news story, but I did find the Sports Illustrated that came out from the same day.
Oh, wow.
The cover story is about Lenny Dykstra. He was batting 400-plus to try to get the Phillies into the chase for the pennant, which they did not ultimately win in 1990. But Lenny Dykstra was, like, this huge baseball phenom in 1990. He was center fielder for the Phillies. But I just thought it was interesting because it's a puff piece. About how great he is. And it turns out,
yeah,
years later, Lenny Dykstra used his baseball money to commit bankruptcy fraud like credit card fraud. And there's this interview with him from like 2000 where he's just clearly on meth or something and is just really self-aggrandizing and weird. And yeah, he defrauded a whole bunch of people out of money and ended up going to prison.
Oh my God.
He also took took $500,000 to pay private detectives to dig up dirt on all of the umpires in the major league and would like say stuff to them at the plate.
Oh, during the game?
To get in their heads.
That's got to be against the rules.
I'm pretty sure it is. But yeah, I just thought this was funny because this is before any of this stuff came out.
Yeah.
It was just like, wow, this guy's a real spark plug. He's a great, he's tough as nails. His nickname was Nails.
Oh, gotcha.
And so it's this huge Sports Illustrated story that, you know,
years... It's kind of like the Milli Vanilli one of last
basically,
episode.
Yeah. Except Lenny Dykstra didn't die.
Oh, no.
And he was a huge jerk. So, or is.
I'm just saying the piece itself is really nice and friendly.
Right.
But turns out...
It turns out... Things would not go so well for Mr. Dykstra. Yeah, that's what was going on June 4th, 1990. In the Star Trek universe, this is Transfiguration. The Enterprise is going to some star cluster, I guess just to like map it.
It's routine mission.
Just a routine mission. They're not even going to visit anybody. They just got to look at some stars.
Yeah.
And
it's a science mission.
As Captain Picard says in his log, that this is a pretty boring thing. It gives people a lot of time for refreshment. So we see Geordi and Worf in 10 Forward.
And this scene's pretty great.
I like this scene.
The first half of this scene is great.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the whole thing. They're hanging out, and they're just, you know, talking to each other, and then these two women at a table behind them. One of them is Christy Henshaw, who Jordy has gone on a date with before.
That's where we saw her.
Yeah, it was in Booby Trap.
Yes. So it's the same girl from Booby
Trap. Same girl.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. That makes this a lot weirder because she was clearly not interested in him then.
Yeah.
But she's like looking over at Jordy and all this stuff. And Jordy just doesn't know what to do. Worf is trying to get him to go over there.
Yes.
And Jordy's just not doing it.
Well, Worf is like the fire.
He needs to see the fire. She needs to see the fire in your eyes, which bad metaphor to use, Worf.
Yeah. He's blind.
Yeah, come on. Pick any other metaphor. And. Yeah.
And the words will come later.
Yeah, yeah. He's just like, be a warrior, you know, get up there and just like be confident. But Jordy doesn't have confidence. That's one of the things about him.
Yeah.
It's difficult for him to muster that confidence in these situations.
And when she's giving you, hey, dude, come talk to me eyes.
Right.
Confidence should come with that.
Right. And then she comes up to him. She's like returning
her
cuffs.
It's the future.
Right. Well, you know, she's trying to like... there's nothing weird about that, even now, you know, it's just I know. And he's like,
women can talk to men. It's okay.
Turns out, she comes up and she's trying to like strike up a conversation with him. She's asking him like how everything is in engineering. And he just says fine. And like looks down at his hands.
Hmm.
And she's like, well, okay. All right. See you later. And Worf is like, oh man, you messed that up.
That
dude.
Was real bad.
That was awful.
She even did the arm touch on
she
her way
She touched his
out.
Arm. Yeah.
That's a girl saying like, come on, dude, open up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Worf is like, look, I tell you what, I will tutor you in this because you are very bad at talking to women. That was awful.
That was embarrassing for everyone.
But then Jordy gets called up.
Yeah.
Up to the bridge. It turns out there had been some kind of wreckage that they found. It was just like floating around in space. And near this planet, they found faint life signs of a humanoid. So what was a routine mission, now something came up.
What? No way.
So Jordy and Dr. Crusher, they got to go down, and I think Data's there too. They got to go down and rescue whoever's down there. And they find this crash like escape pod, and there's a guy there with like half his face burned off.
Yeah, this is the gruesome scene I was
talking
about.
You could like see his teeth and stuff. It was actually pretty gross.
You could see his brain.
Yeah,
I was like, nasty.
I was surprised.
What is this, Breaking Bad?
I know. Damn. Dr. Crusher is hard at work trying to revive this dude, but she says he has damage to his brain stem. There, like, he's just not gonna make it. But what she can do to stabilize him is to have, like, this neural link between Jordy and him. She, like, puts a patch directly on this guy's brain.
Yes.
Because it is exposed.
Yes.
And then a patch on Jordy's forehead. And she's like, what this will do is it'll form a link between your brain and his so you can kind of take control of his bodily functions, breathe deep, because his brain is not able to give those messages to the rest of his body. And if something goes wrong, I will detach the connection. He's like, okay. And then as soon as it hooks up, this like weird yellow light goes into Jordy's head.
Yeah, of course. Because how could this go well?
Right. And he's like, whoa. And she's like, whoa, are you okay, Jordy? And he says, yeah, I'm fine. And just continue with the mission. Mm-hmm. So something has happened. They get beamed up into the sick bay. And they're working on this patient. He has no name. We have no idea who this guy is. He's some kind of alien. That's it. And he is, like, really messed up. He has massive infection. His brain is damaged.
Some sort of cancer.
Right. Like, his cells are multiplying at a crazy rate. And they're just on lockdown to get this guy stabilized. But as it looks right now, this second, it doesn't look like they're going to do it.
Mm-mm.
He's in really bad shape. And the bridge, they have like this little blue spherical thing.
They carry this thing all over the episode.
Yeah. It doesn't really like matter.
It's like a little propane
It's
tank.
A little, yeah, it's a little blue glass ball or something. This is the only piece of the wreckage that they're able to get. And
Which is weird.
Like, they know that this was an escape pod. And they know that this little blue thing came from the original ship, but that's it. that's all that they got. So Picard and Data and Worf, they're trying to figure out what happened. But they know that it has a phaser fire on it, so it was attacked. And we do know that, like, this is probably some way that we can figure out what happened, because this is like part of the computer system or something.
Right. It's the black box.
It's a black box, basically.
Right.
They don't know it's an alien thing, so it's going to like just take some time to study it. So Data has to go figure this thing out. After that, Picard goes to the sick bay. He's checking on this John Doe that they have. It turns out, though, now he seems a lot better.
Yeah, he's awake. Did we do a time dash here? This is where I got a little
I think so, because they mentioned that he had been on the thing for a month. This is shortly before he's awake, though. He's
still under, and
Dr. Crusher's talking to Picard about how, like, oh, he seems to be making a full recovery because his body has this amazing healing property. And she was like, I wish I could take credit for stabilizing him, but it's really weird. And she shows Captain Picard, like, this diagram of his cells or something, and it's just like they're rapidly reproducing at this crazy rate, which sounds like cancer.
Yeah.
But no, this is like his healing factor, basically. Right. He's got Wolverine thing.
Oh, sweet.
He's basically Wolverine.
He's Weapon X.
Yeah.
Let's fill that man full of titanium. But not his, titanium, whatever it is.
Adamantium.
Adamantium, yeah. Well, I said that weird.
Yeah.
Antimatamium.
Yeah, that. But the other thing about his cells is that they're mutating, too. So they're reproducing and they're like changing their genetic structure as this happens. And they don't really know what that means, but they know that it is not related to his injury. It's just something that his body is doing even before it happened.
Yeah, and they don't, it could be part of this alien species.
Yeah.
They really don't know.
They don't know. And they can't ask this guy because he's under right now. Back in 10 forward, Geordi and Data and Worf are talking about that blue thing. And this is weird. They brought it to the bar.
Yeah, well, and then Worf's reaction is,
we're here to chill.
Yeah. Then why bring the blue
thing? Why did you bring that? But they're talking about this thing like, oh, what could this possibly be? And they have all these different like theories, and Worf is just like, let's shut up and drink. Which, okay, fine, but like, why did you bring this thing in here? Someone's going to lose it.
Yeah. I have to say, I love that Worf is hanging out with friends at the bar.
I do, too.
If you remember in earlier episodes, he'd be sitting there alone.
Right.
And they'd be like, come on, Worf, make some friends.
Yeah. No, he's having a good time.
Yeah.
And then
he's got buddies now.
Yeah.
It's good to see Worf with buddies.
Yeah, I agree. And then Geordi is like, well, I feel great. I've never felt better before. I don't know what happened, but I feel amazing. And he sees Christy, and he goes over and talks to her. And he's like, oh, I hope you weren't about to leave. And she says, well, I was just going to go to the Arboretum. He's like, well, would you like some company? And she says, well, I didn't think you were interested in stuff like that. And he loops his
arm. Do you remember
arm.
When I took you to the beach and had that pirate play the violin?
Yeah, do you remember that? And you hated it? And I made it awkward for like a long time.
Yeah, and I was very sexually aggressive. And you then, don't remember that?
And then I made an imaginary girlfriend who was actually based on a real woman.
Apparently you've forgotten all of this and thought I wasn't interested in you at all.
Yeah, even though this has clearly been established in the timeline of this show. So they say all that, basically. And he's like smooth as hell and takes her to the Arboretum.
Yeah, he's so smooth.
Yeah, something has changed with him. Yeah, back in the sick bay, though, this is where their John Doe reawakens.
Okay, so is this where the time dash happens?
I don't think so. I think that's later when they're like trying
to... I got so confused on the timeline.
We know that it takes place over a month.
We know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
When did we jump forward a month?
Not quite yet. He like wakes up because it's only been 36 hours by this point.
Okay.
And all of his organs are functioning. And this is a very brief scene, but it's important because he wakes up and he says, I'm alive. And Dr. Crusher is like, yes, I don't know how, but you're here. And he says, thank you for my life. And then he's like, could you tell me who I am? So we know that he has no memory.
Right.
And
well, his brain was exposed.
His brain was exposed. This kind of makes sense.
And there was a metal object placed directly on it.
Right. It kind of seems unsanitary. She didn't even like wash it beforehand.
Yeah. She didn't even blow it off.
Yeah. Yeah, now is where the time dash happens. So we have another captain's log break, and it's talking about how, like, oh, he's making a lot of progress or whatever. It's been a month, and John Doe is working with Dr. Crusher to get his limbs back. And she has all this exposition about how, like, he's been doing really well and recovering much more quickly than she anticipated. And now they put these, like, electric things on his arms and legs to try to get him to walk around. But he still doesn't know who he is. So they're just calling him John Doe. He has no idea.
Yeah, he's even going by John now.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just what his name is.
Yep.
When he gets up, he's like, well, I think I'll surprise you, Doctor. I feel strong enough to fly. And then he falls down because he hasn't had to use his legs in, like, a month.
Right.
And he's like, well, let me focus on walking first. And this is where, like, he has, like, this weird energy pulse come out of his chest.
Right.
So after he's walking around, he has this, like, it's looks like he's in chest pain, and he has a glowing thing, and he doesn't know what it is. Mm-mm. He's like, I don't know what that is. It's just happening. It hurts a lot. I feel like it's important, but I don't know. I can't tell you what that is.
Yeah, I don't know, but it hurts.
Yeah. So Dr. Crusher has a mystery to solve. Meanwhile, in the turbo lift, Geordi and Christy are making out.
Hell yeah.
And then Riker walks in, and he's, like, kind of taken aback. He's like,
room for one more?
Yeah. Well, and, like, Christy leaves, and then Riker comes in. He's like, whoa, huh? So, Christy Henshaw, huh? How about that? Pretty cool. You seem different, or something seems a little different.
Can't get that smile off your face.
Right, and Geordi's like, oh, I'm just the same. But for some reason, I just feel more confident. I don't know what happened. Back in sick bay, this is where Miles O'Brien comes in, wearing this fluorescent blue wetsuit thing. It's extremely early 90s, but he had dislocated his shoulder while kayaking in the holodeck.
Yeah, and somebody on Twitter has shared with me their point of view of Miles O'Brien, which I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was.
Yeah.
But it was the whole thing of, he's the only guy who works really hard at his job and then just wants to go home and play video games.
You know, that's probably why I like him so much. I feel like I can relate to this guy.
I love Miles O'Brien.
He's just like a normal dude.
Right.
And yeah, so he's dislocated his shoulder, and Dr. Crusher is, like, trying to get ready, but it's taking her some time. And Miles is like, this really hurts. Please hurry up. And then John comes over and just touches his shoulder and heals him. It's totally fine. He didn't even have to, like, do that thing like they do in the movie where they, in movies where they, like, crack someone's dislocated shoulder back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Didn't have to do that. He just touches his shoulder, and it's fine. He just does some Jesus stuff, and, yep, he's all better.
Hey, in movies, when they do that, is that possible, or would that still really hurt?
I do not know.
Because I think it's supposed to be, if it's dislocated, you can slap it back in if it's not torn, right?
Yeah, I think so. I know they do it in Blade at one point.
They do it in a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
Now I want to know.
Yeah, don't try that, though, at home. We are not medical professionals.
No, neither of us have the stomach to even consider being a medical professional.
I almost got grossed out this Star Trek episode. That's how squeamish I am.
I did get grossed out, man. That was nasty.
But yeah, John heals his shoulder, and he's got he does it with the glowing energy pulse thing, and then, yeah, he's fine. Wesley is watching this, too. So he sees all this stuff happen. And over dinner, Wesley's talking to his mom. And
I didn't recognize Wesley was in that room because he's in the new uniform.
Yeah.
It was it played with my mind that he's now in that red uniform.
Right. He's
been
he's
in that
full
light
ensign
blue thing
right
forever.
Yeah. No, he's a real officer.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real boy now.
But real boy genius.
He's talking to his mom about, like, this really weird relationship that he sees developing between her and John.
This scene was awkward.
This was awkward because, like, she keeps saying that, like, I'm not romantically inclined to this guy, but I find him intriguing, and I'm trying to avoid any false sense of intimacy between a doctor-patient relationship.
I'm not into him at all.
Right.
Wink.
But she's clearly, like, she says, I find him compelling.
It's like a forbidden love kind of thing.
Right.
Like, she is interested, but she knows she's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Wink.
I know.
That's how I felt like the whole scene went.
Yeah. And that,
but he's so handsome and charming.
This relationship,
but I don't like him.
This
wink.
This relationship never gets explored, too.
No.
This is, it stays like this for the rest
it's
of the episode.
It's just Beverly's fantasy.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. She comes right out and says it, though, which is like a weird thing to say to your son.
Yes.
About your patient, who
yes.
you are definitely not supposed to date.
No. You know that?
Huh?
You know that for sure?
Yeah, like it's a doctor-patient relationship thing, I think.
Is it part of the
Hippocratic Oath?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's in the oath. Or it's like, I should do no harm, blah, blah, blah. Not,
I wonder.
Not screw my patients.
I wonder how many doctors have hooked up with patients throughout time. It's got to be really high.
I believe it is seen as a huge ethical breach to do that.
I would agree, but
yeah,
humans are like gross and do stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure it's happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, at least wait until he's not your patient anymore.
Right. Well, that's probably a lot more common.
Yeah.
They met. Sparks flew over the surgery table.
Oh, man. Yeah, we probably really shouldn't be doctors.
I don't think I know what a doctor does.
Yeah. Well, back on the bridge, so Data and Picard and Riker and stuff, they're figuring out where this guy's planet is from. They somehow zero in on the coordinates of all these quasars, like,
well,
Data.
They figure out the blue bulb thing is a biological.
Oh, okay.
And then they can plug it into the computer once they figure that
right,
out.
Right, and it kind of works.
And it works.
Somehow.
Yeah.
But they...
They scienced their way
through
this
thing. Yeah, they rolled a 20, and they figured out where this guy's planet is at.
Crit success on science.
Yeah, but they're able to, like, zero in on some, like, quasar or pulsar or whatever, and it's like, yeah it's near that thing. Data did most of the work.
Yes. I love Picard in the scene, by the way. He's just standing behind Geordi.
He's just watching.
Yeah, he's just standing behind Geordi and Data, and he's got this look of like, I have no idea what's happening.
But now that Picard has this information, he goes and visits John in the sick bay to let him know. It's like, hey, man, we found your home planet. We're going to take you there. So we're just letting you know. We'll be there in like 3 weeks. And he's like, no, you can't take me. And they're like, well, why? And John says, I just know that I can't go back yet. That's all he knows. That's it. So he's like getting bits and pieces, but he doesn't remember his name. He doesn't know anything that would say, you know, further the plot or give us any kind of interesting information.
No,
to
he
go
knows
off
just enough information.
All he
to
knows
further
is
the plot.
That he is in trouble if he goes back there.
Yeah.
So Picard is like, well, you know what? It'll be 3 weeks. Maybe you'll think of something on the way there, but, you know, we're going to put the ship in that course because we don't know what else to do with you. So he's like, okay, that sounds good. And then they leave, and then John has that, like, glowy thing happen to him again. It's even more bright and powerful this time. So we still don't know what this is.
Yeah. They're like heart attacks.
Yeah, it looks like he's in chest pain when he has these. In the next scene, it is John and Dr. Crusher in 10 Forward. And this is John's first day out of sickbay. Dr. Crusher is, like, setting him down. They order some drinks. And John says something like, this is remarkable. There's all these people from different backgrounds working together. And Dr. Crusher is like, yeah, that's not weird at all. This is Star Trek. That's kind of our whole deal. And he's like, well, I don't know why I know this, but I feel like my people are different. That is a problem that we have, and that's all that I know. And
I think I'm part of a racist group.
Right, I know. He doesn't have any other information besides that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like, or John is telling Crusher that, like, he's really glad that they have this friendship or whatever, and Crusher says it too, and it seems like they're both aware that there is some kind of mutual attraction that they can't really do anything about. But John says, what else I do know is that I'm on some kind of journey. And I don't know what it is, but I know it's important that I get there. I don't know what that means.
Nobody does.
Nobody does.
John
doesn't know either.
Nope.
He just knows that he has some kind of purpose that he's looking for. And I assume it has something to do with those energy pulse things by this point.
Yeah, they got to.
They got to.
Why do they keep happening?
Well, you know, maybe really poor writing. But no, it's not a coincidence.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm
getting some vibes from you, Patrick, about how you're going to rate this episode.
No, I mean, if the energy pulses were just there as a coincidence and had nothing to do with the plot, that would suck.
That'd be really annoying.
That would be very annoying.
Well, kind of like the love connection between the two of them.
Yeah.
It's a little annoying.
Yeah. But as it turns out, it does have something to do with his purpose, which we'll see later. But now Worf has to put the ship on high alert because he's up on the bridge. He's like, Captain, we got an alien ship coming, like, really, really fast. They are at high warp.
It's a dope-looking ship, too.
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Normally, a lot of these alien ships kind of look dumb, like just the one-off races that mm-hmm. you never see again. Mm-hmm. But this one looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because it is highly advanced. It has the same weapons as the Enterprise, basically. So it is a match for it. And they were refusing to accept any communication hailing. So you can't talk to them. We're in some kind of alien race's space right now, so that's probably why they're coming. And it'll intercept in 10 hours. So within 10 hours, they got to figure out what the hell to do.
Yep.
It has now been 2 months on board, and John is, he's like got extremely tough energy pulse things going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's hurting him. And he's now at the point where he's stuck in the sick bay, and he feels like his energy stuff is going to like blow up, basically. And he tries to flee from Dr. Crusher. She's like, "What? Where are you going?" He's like, "I just know I have to get off the ship."
Yeah.
Okay.
And he makes it. He makes a break for it.
Yeah, he runs. He runs to the shuttle bay.
Yeah.
And there's in the shuttle bay, you got some people working on the Elbaz. And
good old Elbaz.
I thought it blew up for some reason. I could be thinking of a different one.
The Einstein blew up.
The Einstein I know blew up. Yeah, John runs in, and he like makes it up to the control booth. And tries to open up the doors and stuff. And he's like glowing even more while this is happening. He's in deep pain. Worf and Crusher come in and they're like, "Hey, look, you need to step back from that booth." Worf runs up to the control booth and he's got a phaser and he says, "John, look, I don't want to hurt you, but I have to ask you to step away from this booth." And John says, "Look, something is happening to me. You need to get away because it will hurt you. And I have no control over it." And right in the middle of that sentence, it knocks Worf over the edge of this control booth thing, and he falls on the ground and breaks his neck. And Dr. Crusher, like, runs vital signs and stuff, and she's like, "Yeah, there's no life signs. He's effectively dead." And then John does the healing thing.
Yeah, that like, Jesus thing again.
He does the Jesus thing, and it repairs his neck, and Worf is alive. And Dr. Crusher is like, "There is no sign of any injury whatsoever. I don't know how this happened."
Yep.
No one really has any answers.
Yep.
In the ready room.
Kind of a weird scene.
It is.
Beverly's also pleading with him to stop, and I don't know. Why did the scene happen?
Yeah.
To prove his powers are so strong?
Yeah, I guess so. They wanted to have him bring someone back from the dead, I guess. I don't know. They're really
and
pushing this Jesus thing.
Yeah, and like a lot.
Really hard. Because he came back from the dead. He heals other people. He brings other people back from the dead. He's persecuted by his own society.
Oh, my God. You're right.
it's really
like a
heavy-handed
message. Yeah.
Well, it's called the Transfiguration, which is like a thing that happened.
Oh, my God. Patrick!
It's when Jesus went up to Mount Tabor. And
Yeah, that's right.
So...
So this is a Bible passage.
I got a lot of flashbacks to CCD in this one. So
that's a Catholic education for anybody who's not a Catholic.
Confraternity of Christian Doctrine. But yeah, that is definitely the name of the episode, even.
You're right.
Is a reference.
I really didn't think about it that much until we're having this conversation.
That's part of the reason why this episode bothered me so much,
because
it was so ham-fisted.
Yeah.
But yeah, he brings Worf back.
I was more bothered by the production value and that guy's onesie.
Oh, no, I love that. This guy, I forgot to talk about that. This guy has this hilarious onesie that it's like impossible to not showcase his junk. Well, like onesies are uncomfortable, and they do that. But especially if they're skin tight and white.
Yeah.
So the entire time he's like got his nuts hanging out.
Yeah, poor guy.
It looked so uncomfortable.
Yeah, and there's a lot of scenes where you're just like, ah, someone should put a codpiece on
him
or something.
Yeah, Jesus.
There's very clearly a ball sack under
there. Squished up. This poor man.
This poor guy.
But yeah, he brings Worf back from the dead. And then in the next scene, John is in the ready room with Picard. And Picard is like just trying to interrogate him on all this. He's like, why did you steal the shuttle? And he's like, I don't know. He's like, that's not a good answer. I can't have you on my ship doing stuff like this. You killed Worf. And then Dr. Crusher's like, but he brought him back.
Yeah, but he still killed him.
He still killed him. And he says, you know, like, I can't control what's happening here, but I need to get out. I need to get off the ship before I hurt somebody. Please understand that I cannot control what's happening to my body. And Picard's like, well, we can't send you off the ship. We're not anywhere where you can be.
Where would you go?
So what I can do is have you under constant surveillance just to make sure you're all right and that you're not hurting anybody. They now, getting a response to the hailing frequencies to this alien vessel. And they're on the bridge with John, and it's this guy shows up. John immediately recognizes him. And they turn on the mute, and Picard's like, hey, who is that guy? He's like, that's Sunad. I don't know anything about him. I just know he's evil.
It's a bad man.
That's all I know. That's all I can remember, this I do know. So they're like, okay, we'll keep that in mind. And they start talking to this guy, Sunad, and he's like, I'm Sunad from Zalkon, and you're in our space, so don't do that. And also, it looks like you've got a prisoner that needs to be turned over to us.
Yeah, belongs to us. None of your business why.
Right.
So there's a whole lot of scenes here where there's no why.
Yep.
Yep.
They just tell you, yeah, that is a guy that we need, and he is a criminal, and he deserves death. So hand him over, or we're going to blow you up. You have 2 hours, and that's pretty much
it.
Yep. End frequency. And then Picard talks to Troy, and he's like, so do you really think they're going to attack us? And she's like, yeah, he means it. We got to hand him over. Or figure out another way, or we're going to be attacked. He really hates this dude. I don't know what you did. I don't know what you did, John, but you pissed this guy off real bad. So Dr. Crusher is like, I don't understand, like, how this guy could be a criminal. Like, he's such a nice guy. And, you know, but we can't let our personal relationships interfere with this thing. So they're like going over all this thing in the not the ready room, but like that conference room.
Yeah.
And they're like, they don't want to give him up. And Dr. Crusher remarks that we just put all this effort into saving this guy. We're going to hand him over just to be killed.
Like, seems like a waste.
Right.
But this is where Picard has that great scene of like, we don't know anything about this man.
Right.
Beverly,
you have
these personal feelings and you want to save him, but he could be a horrible criminal.
Yeah, we don't know.
We don't know anything.
Yeah.
And he killed Worf.
Yeah.
But she brought him, he brought him back.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, are you still guilty of murder if you're able to save them after they're dead?
Well, I mean,
we still did the act of killing
them.
We
do know that it was an accident when he did it. But the thing is like, there's so much
manslaughter.
There's
fine.
So much uncertainty around this guy.
Yeah.
And they don't want to give him up because, you know, they don't execute people in the Federation. But, you know, they
should have executed Neelix.
Man, you really hate whoever the hell that is. but you know, they also don't want to meddle in this other nation's affairs. That's kind of against the Prime Directive. So what do they do? Like,
I love how you said kind of against the Prime Directive.
Well, because we never know what is, do we?
Did they? They didn't really talk about the Prime Directive.
Not at all. I don't really know if that affects pre-warp stuff, but I do know it's a guiding principle not to like do imperialism.
Yeah, totally. Know? Not intentional imperialism, not,
yeah,
at the least.
Because they're on a peaceful mission, and they don't want to get involved with another group's
internal
politics and stuff. So, yeah, they're kind of in a tight spot, but they're going to try to negotiate their way out of it. So Picard is like, look, Sunad, I know you hate this guy. And it turns out he's just like some political prisoner.
Yes.
Like
he spreads lies.
Like, he spreads lies about our leaders. They're like, okay, well, that's kind of dumb to kill somebody about. Did you know that this guy, though, he's like, he can heal stuff and he's got energy pulses and it's pretty cool. that you might want to take a look at this. And they're like, oh no, that's bad. There are others like him that we hunted down and killed.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wait a minute. What?
Okay. Well, that backfired.
Wait, you killed the other apostles? Oh, no.
Oh, no. So, yeah, there are others that were with John that were like him. They had some kind of ability. And the Zalconians did not like that. And he's the last one remaining. And they're going to kill him. And it's really important to them that they do it because they say it will destroy their society. But they're not going to hand John over. So Sunad's like, okay, we're gonna attack you. And he motions to someone else in the ship, and it makes everyone in the Enterprise suffocate.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how they did that.
I don't
that.
Know how they did this.
Do they have magic, too?
No. Maybe they, like, cut the life support somehow?
But
I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe they, like, hacked
what
their ship.
What a gruesome move, though.
Yeah, that's messed
because you could also
up.
Preserve the ship.
You can just steal it that way.
Yeah. It's a lot smarter than blowing it up.
Yeah. Truly evil, but damn. So everyone is suffocating. Data, I think, is fine, though. And
yeah, he would have just watched everyone die.
Back in the sickbay, John is fine. He, you know, walks out, hears some commotion, and he sees Beverly on the floor, and he heals her. And they go outside, and they see this other guy, and they heal him. And they don't go through this whole thing where he just heals everyone that's suffocating on the ship, because that wouldn't work. So he just, like, puts his hand on the wall, and it restores the life support. Like, everyone's fine. So, I don't know how he healed the ship, but he healed the ship.
Yeah, powerful dude.
Yeah. So, John and Dr. Crusher go up to the bridge, and Sunad is like, oh, there he is. All right. We're going to target all the weapons on the Enterprise. We're going to fire. This is it. But then before he can, John just, like, teleports him onto the bridge.
Yeah, just grabs him.
Yeah, and it's real quick. It's just like, whoop, whoop. Yep. Now he's on the bridge. And Sunad is like, what the hell? Hey, look, Picard, listen, you were butting in where you don't belong. This John guy, he's dangerous. And John then butts in and tells everyone finally what his whole deal is.
He finally remembers at the end of the episode.
The very
perfect
end.
Timing.
Yeah. So he says that all the stuff about his cells, all the energy pulses, the healing, that is because he is going through an evolutionary change. And there were others like him that were just on the cusp of this thing. And the Zalconians said that it was evil and it needs to be stopped. And these people need to be hunted down. And John and his friends wanted to escape. You know, go to some other planet where they could go through the transformation and allow their bodies to naturally do what they do. And that's it. That's the only reason why Sunad wants to capture him.
It's like X-Men.
Yeah, it's basically like humans. The mutants in X-Men.
Yeah.
And yeah.
This is when he changes, right?
Yeah, he goes, he has one of those pulse heart attack things, and but it's really big this time. And now he is fully gold or something.
Yeah, this suit.
He's supposed to be like a being of pure energy, but he's just in like the Green Man costume from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yep.
And
it
he's
has
walking
a light
around.
Glow around.
My
it.
Favorite part, though, is that when he's talking to people, his voice is clearly muffled.
Oh, yeah. He's just talking through the costume.
Through the costume.
Yeah. Also, guy can't escape Camel Toe.
Nope. Still got it. Even if you're being pure energy. Pure energy. You got some problems with your junk if you're wearing a one-piece costume. It's still going to happen.
And that is probably some of the worst special effects we've seen in a long time.
It was pretty rough. But yeah, he tells Sunad, he's like, look, you can be just like me if you want to. And Sunad's like, hell no.
Who would want to be? Look at your
Why would
junk.
I do that?
That looks so uncomfortable.
And he's like, okay, fine, your choice. Being pure energy. I feel great. But he's like, look, you cannot prevent other people from doing this. It's just going to happen, and you have to be okay with it. And he sends Sunad back, and that ship gets the hell out of there. They do not want to deal with this.
Yeah.
And then he tells everyone, like, hey, thanks for healing me. Thanks for saving my life. I appreciate it. But now I gotta go. Beverly, it was great to get to know you. And he like touches her face with his being of pure energy hand. And Captain Picard's like, yeah, it's really cool to see a new species be born. And then he goes off into space, just shoots up through the
kinda
ceiling.
Kind of like the energy being from the child.
Basically, yeah.
We're
the
just
same
floating
thing. Another
thing of energy in
heavy,
space.
Heavy-handed Jesus reference.
Oh, yeah. Well.
But yeah, that's the end of the episode.
Credits. Well, Patrick, this is the part of the podcast where we like to rate what we just saw. If we thought it was amazing, must watch Star Trek. We set to kill. If we thought it was pretty good, it comes up in the queue, give it a watch. We set to stun. And if we thought it was terrible, avoid at all costs, we leave it in the holster. So, Patrick, tell me, what'd you think?
Man, I gotta leave this one in the holster. As I had mentioned before, like, I feel like the Jesus references were... I'm not against that being done by any means. It is, like, one of the biggest cultural touchstones in the West. You're gonna have some kind of Jesus reference at some point. But it was just so ham-fisted.
Yeah.
It was just like a one-to-one.
It's like the end of the third Matrix movie.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I cannot stand this.
I get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were some good parts. But, you know, like the stuff with Worf was great. And Geordi. And it took too long to get to the meat of this whole thing.
Yes.
It just took too damn long for people to figure out what was happening. And I feel like it could be an interesting story. Like, I am actually fascinated by stories of people that can't remember who they are. There's a story of this guy named Benjamin Kyle, who woke up behind a Burger King in Georgia with no identification, and it took him 20 years to figure out who he was.
Oh,
fascinating story. This could have been something like that, and I was hoping it was at the beginning, and it just got so long and drawn out that, like, yeah, I can't. Can't give this anything but a leave in the holster. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry, because I'm leaving this one in the holster,
too.
Oh,
man.
Man, worst of season three, I think.
Really?
I think. I don't think worst Star Trek, but...
Oh, no.
I don't know. Geordi was cool. Like, here's the thing. And I'm trying to just bring up points that you didn't bring up.
Okay.
Because I agree with almost everything you said. The B-plot... was Geordi and his confidence
mm-hmm.
and his love life.
Yep.
But we really didn't see a story happen around that.
Nope.
Besides the fact that he's confident.
Just, yep, he just has confidence.
So give me a good B plot, because this A plot lingered too long.
Mm-hmm.
And also wasn't, I guess it's nice that Beverly had a chance to shine.
Yeah.
But then they, I don't know.
It was all about this other character,
it was all about
this
dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Leaving the holster. Boring.
Yeah.
Boring, bad special effects. I know I don't want to judge special effects, but by the bar set on the show already this season, these special effects were cheesy and bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would have rather watched Chief O'Brien in the holodeck.
Yeah. If there is just an episode that goes through his day.
Him kayaking. I would have loved it.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick, next episode, you're in for a treat.
That's what I hear. That's what people tell me.
Yep.
It's a two-parter, right?
It's a two-parter.
And it's got the Borg, right?
Something like that.
Okay.
Borg or two.
Oh. Well, there's always more than one.
Is there anything you want to talk about before we get out of here?
Yeah, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to people that give at our Patreon.
Ooh, Patreon? What's
yeah.
that?
Patreon is a way that you can support us here at Patrick. With monthly donations, and we've got, you know, occasionally a couple little extra episodes of the original series for people that give $5 a month or more.
Yeah.
So you can find that at patreon.com/PatTrek.
Cool. And you can follow me on Twitter at PatLikesToTweet, because Facebook is for noobs. And listen to The Dungeon Rats. It's an interactive Dungeons & Dragons adventure that I play with my friends. You submit monsters, plot twists, magic items, and anything else you can think of, and then we got to deal with them. It's been a blast making, just like the excuse to watch Star Trek with my good friend Patrick every single week.
Let's see what's out there.
Peaches. Hot sauce. Peaches.